This is The Conversation. It's episode 111 with Tulsa Kinney of Artillery Magazine, the Los Angeles-based glossy magazine on art, contemporary art. Even if you do not live in Los Angeles, I promise there will be a ton for you. We do not simply talk about LA the whole time. It's good stuff. I'm Michael Shaw. Welcome to the show. Good to have you back. Good to be back. A couple of things I wanted to talk about before we get to that conversation. One is, and I hope you will find this exciting, we have a date for a live podcast of The Conversation, the first live recording that we will be doing, and that is Wednesday, September 9th, at Oki Projects Gallery in the Arlington Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, so centrally located for all you Angelenos. So I hope you will come out. As far as what we're going to be talking about, let's just say that it's going to cover a bunch of relevant things, that many of which have come up here: abstraction, the market explosion in abstraction, the relevance of object art versus social art, and so on. It'll be more concise, but that'll give you a little bit of taste, and it will be probably four of us. We're still working on the fourth person, but I think that'll come together. So set your calendars for that. I look forward to seeing you there. A couple other things I want to mention before we get to the conversation with Tulsa and my great co-host, Deb Cloudman. One is that in the conversation with Tulsa, we talk about, speaking of Tulsa, Larry Clark, who did the famous Tulsa series of photographs. And coincidentally, we received a Don't Call Us email with a great anecdote regarding Larry Clark and his photographs that you should go check out at the website, theconversationpod.com, in the Don't Call Us section, which you are always welcome to contribute to if you've got anything, and you can find out more there. But go check out that anecdote. It's good stuff. And one other thing I want to just mention, in case you didn't see this, in the New York Times a week ago, now that I'm speaking, there was a profile of the Guerrilla Girls, the anonymous feminist activist group that charts the art world and its lack of fairness, if you will, and for lack of a better term. And they attended the opening of the Whitney, the recent opening of the Whitney Museum's new building. And shortly after the opening and their arrival, they projected a message onto the side of the building, which I thought was awesome, and I just wanted to share with you in case you didn't see it. So the projection on the outside of the Whitney Museum was, "Dear art collector, art is so expensive, even for billionaires. We totally get why you can't pay all your employees a living wage." All right, let's get to the conversation with Tulsa. Maybe our conversation will reflect a little bit of what I just read. Thank you very much for being here. I have a couple of additional important announcements that I would like to share with you on the back end, so stay tuned for those, and thank you again for being here. I'll talk to you on the back end. Circles broken, lines dividing. Do you want to do the intro?
No.
This is The Conversation. And once again, I am gratefully joined by Deb Cloudman.
Yay.
And nice, we are joined by Tulsa Kinney.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having
Hi,
me.
Hi, Tulsa.
Hi.
How long do you think it'll take for people to hear that you have an accent?
Oh, I think kind of a while, because I think I've been losing it.
Since when?
Since about 30 years ago.
Well, that's a good place to start. Is that how long you've been in Los Angeles?
Right.
Or...
Yes.
Yes.
30. Wait, I moved here 86. Yeah. Well, next year.
Oh, wow.
29
right,
years.
Right, right.
So. And you're from, if I remember from our previous conversation on the phone, Southern Missouri, is it?
Right. Yes.
What's the town called?
It's called Lamar, Missouri, and it's a little tiny town.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is Missouri sort of divided between the Midwest and the North and the South in the South, or is
it
not quite like that?
It was a neutral state in the Civil War.
I wish people could see your facial expressions right now.
Describe.
They're so perfect.
So it was, I don't know, it's not really the South. People from the real South would probably say, you're not a Southern, or, you know, so.
Right.
But it's... it's hickish enough.
When you came to LA, what was the idea? Did you come to go to art school or?
Right. Yeah, I went to USC. I did at least have a little bit of a stepping stone. I went from Lamar to, you know, surrounding bigger cities, you know, and ended up in Tulsa, hence my nickname.
So, what's your birth name?
Barbara Lynn.
I had no idea. I love that.
You needed a little street cred, and
well,
so.
I didn't do that. I went to USC, and I had a really thick accent.
And
I mean, very thick accent because I heard myself right before, and it was really bad. And so, they just started calling me Tulsa, and I think it was because of my accent, and it just stuck. And I decided to keep it. Everybody said, oh, it's great. It suits you. You're not a Barbara. So,
I think people would be very interested to know what it's like sort of lessening an accent over the years. I mean, is it completely unconscious in your case?
Yes.
Or did you, was there any point where you're like, I have to sort of minimize? I can tell you, I'm going to drop a little personal experience because I know somebody very well. I'm not going to get too personal. Who is from the Midwest?
Did I look surprised?
And she would say, "Oh, is that a mountain?" mountain.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
So that was something that she corrected and was very self-conscious about.
Right.
And she did that in a pretty short period of time.
Right. I think there's a lot of people that you'll notice, you know, that are from foreign countries and they lived here 30 years
sure.
and you can't even understand them still.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, what is that? You know, I still can't understand you. And I think you make a conscious decision. I made a conscious decision when I was corrected or people kind of made fun of me. You know, then I would be, okay, I don't say icebox anymore. Or,
right.
Okay, I'm not going to say bin, a pin for
right.
a pen.
Right.
You know, and stuff like that.
Right.
So I think, oh, and Wilshire.
I think
I said Wilshire when I moved here. And
yeah.
So you get corrected, and then I think, you don't work on it. Or, I mean, I think, I don't. I've what, got other things to think about. You know?
What was your self-image? I mean, it sounds like everything was kind of groovy with your fellow classmates, but did you have a lot of self-consciousness when they gave you that nickname?
No, I mean...
It was a loving nickname.
I guess so. Everyone was totally... I did go to USC, which is kind of funny because there's a lot of, you know, hoopla about it right now.
I know,
but
I
did enjoy that beautiful arrangement of the, you know, only six students... You know, so we were
definitely.
A really tight group, and everybody was very accepting of everybody, and everybody enjoyed the diversity, I think.
Right.
You know? And, you know, I mean, I was kind of a hick, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
And now look
hey,
at you.
Hey, they...
publishing an art
oh,
magazine
yeah.
in L.A.
Woo-hoo, yeah. Right. So I don't know. I knew some things. I came and taught everyone about Larry Clark, so... I had things to offer, you know.
Fantastic.
So you had to sort of live up to your namesake then.
I guess, or something. I mean, like, hey, I was into Larry Clark before I was called Tulsa, so.
Okay.
But, I mean, I did have a few things that I think I was able to contribute to people that didn't know. I mean, I remember showing Larry Clark and no one even knew who he was.
So. Right, right. Yeah.
So.
What was the makeup of the program? Was it mostly people who were native to California or Los Angeles? Or
It was a mix, and I was wondering always if I got picked because, you know, I was from,
right.
you know, Tulsa providing the necessary diversity. But it was kind of a mix. But you know what? It was a lot of Californians that time. Well, there was someone from Wisconsin and... But, you know, it was just six. But I think there was four Californians, maybe.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But then the class above you was already, you know, picked. So.
Can I ask if you're comfortable with it, is there a strong alumni reaction that you're sort of part of or people that you speak with about what's been going on with the USC program?
Well, I'm not really part of it because
right.
I think I was really way too, like, they're
right.
not even considering me. I think actually someone did contact me and asked me to do a comment, and I will. I haven't yet, but...
Who asked
you? One of the women that worked there, she used to be on the staff, and she's compiling... Her name's Barbara Elwood, and she's combining... She used to work there, like,
right.
in the office and stuff, and she was asking for comments. But I graduated in 1988, so right. I did see a little bit of community of, you know, the 2000 graduates. I think I'm a little too old or something.
Right. Were you a painter at USC?
I was a painter, and I did photography, and then I started doing video.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was that kind of partly through the influence of the culture at the time?
I was really getting into like filmmaking when I was in Tulsa. I was experimenting with 16 millimeter film and stuff. So I was totally into that.
Right.
And photography. And I still painted. So, mm-hmm. And then, of course, the natural thing was to kind of go to video. And right. I bought a video camera. But, you know, mainly a painter, though, too. I think if you asked any of my professors, they'd say I was a painter.
And why was the natural thing to go to video?
Oh, from film, because it was too expensive. Yeah, you know, film was so expensive. And I was a purist. I had to do 16 millimeter black and white film only, you know.
Right.
One of those kind of things. Yeah. So it was ridiculous.
The most beautiful,
and
the most classic.
And then you couldn't get sound with it. So I ended up doing video. I did a lot of video, actually.
When was it when you started Artillery Magazine?
2006 in September.
Okay.
So we're coming upon our 10th anniversary.
Right. Yeah. I'm obviously skipping ahead quite a bit here, but I wanted to get to the transition period from artist to publisher. I mean, that's not that long ago in the scope of, you know, the time you're being here.
Right.
So why don't we talk about briefly what your life as an artist was like? You know, as
LA.
It was your main identity.
Yeah, after grad school, you know. It was a struggle, you know, because, first of all, there weren't near as many galleries still. So that's kind of interesting. And it was hard to get a show. I mean, I was in a lot of group shows, many, you know, a few solo shows here and there.
Right.
I never really landed a gallery. And, you know, I thought my work was really pretty strong, actually. I still think I'm a pretty good painter. I mean, you know, but it was more difficult. It was much kind of there just wasn't as many galleries,
much smaller pool of places to show.
Yeah. Right. So it was a struggle, but I kept doing it, you know, and I was really liked showing video and stuff, and you know, I was just doing what a lot of artists do. I was working full time at the LA Weekly, though. I didn't go the route of a teacher, you know. So I was working at the LA Weekly, and then I was around a lot of writers, and I've always liked writers and stuff like that. So I don't know. I was struggling as an artist, and then I started writing.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
might start seeing the transition.
Sure.
I started then. I was really into writing.
What were you doing at the LA Weekly?
Well, I was a graphic designer,
mm-hmm.
and I just did that. And then I wrote one thing for them, and then it was kind of, it ended up being really good, or, you know, at least I got a lot of encouragement and stuff. So they were just like, yeah, give us some more. It was like first person stuff. Like, so I usually wrote for that. They had a column called First Person.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote for those, and then they started letting me write, you know, in that talk of the town, little like scene things. And then I would get to interview people. Like, I got to interview Larry Clark. They were just, sure, let's do Larry Clark. And I would even do a little few reviews and stuff. But I told them I didn't want to do art reviews because I was still making art.
Right.
So
you felt like that was a conflict of interest, or?
Right. I didn't want to. And also, I still don't like to do reviews, and I won't do reviews.
Right.
I don't like to.
Do you do profiles, though? Or?
Yes,
okay.
That's what I really like to do.
Got it.
Yeah.
So the Larry Clark one was like your first big profile,
well,
or just one memorable one?
For a big publication like LA Weekly.
Yeah.
I mean, I did write for Coagula. I don't know if you guys remember Coagula.
Well, Coagula still sort of exists, doesn't it? At least in spirit.
Online.
In some form,
right. But that was kind of a magazine that everybody loved to hate, that kind of thing. And Matt, you know, he's totally cool. He, you know, I would say, can I write something, and he's like, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, he didn't pay anyone, and but it was fun.
Definitely.
So I had fun doing, I think I did some kind of fun pieces with that, and that actually was what kind of got me going. I mean, I don't want to, I just want to say I did edit Coagula once for a whole year. And Matt asked me, he was getting a little burned out, but he didn't want to let the thing go,
right?
So he said, do you want to edit the magazine? And I was just like, wow, okay, I'll try it. That sounds fun. And then I was hooked.
Was it a job, though?
Yeah, right. I did
He was paying you.
Yeah, I mean, very nominal. I mean, it was a labor of love.
Yeah.
Right, you know. Right, right.
But yeah, he paid me. He totally did. Uh-huh. Actually, I made more than I do now.
Yeah.
So he paid me better than I pay myself.
Right,
so,
right. Anyway. What I was thinking, though, as you were talking about Coagula, is that, because I kept thinking about 2006.
Right.
That's when you started it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if nothing else, you started before the crash and you've survived long after the crash. So that says something. How did you manage to do that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a miracle. I will give some credit to Paige Wherry. She was our publisher for really during that. And she really added a really good dimension to the magazine, you know. She was just very, strong personality. Deb knows her. Yeah. I mean, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, you're
yes,
right. Okay.
I do.
And she, you need a publisher. And that freed me to be an editor and her to be a publisher. And she just really, she had a very strong personality. And there were enough galleries, I think, that were still, pretty doing okay, and we have very reasonable rates, and we are, for profit, so we do, exist on the sale of advertising. And, we were just, barely making it, but we were in the black,
Is that what the publisher, for people listening, of a magazine of this size, they basically have to do everything but editing, and that the main part of that is raising money, right?
Right.
Through advertising,
they get the money.
So are they the publisher / advertising manager?
In this case, yes, because we're such a very small, operation. I'm sure the publisher of like Artform probably doesn't sell ads, but they might be the one who goes and gets like
the major
like probably who's at Night Landing or
what? Night Landsman, yeah. Landsman. Actually, I was. He's actually a very specific case. He's a real bon vivant of sorts and a real fashion plate, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, that's so very good to have. And
but
I think Paige was a little bit of that. She had that presence.
Charismatic and tall and present at openings. And
Right. So we're kind of lacking that right now.
So she left, and you two had to basically do double duty.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now. It's too much. That's why I didn't get to.
But you did mention, though, when we spoke earlier, that you have a publisher upcoming, correct?
I did, and that fell through.
Oh, geez, we're sorry.
So,
Blarg. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a public announcement. I'm looking for a publisher.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, our rates are pretty low, actually. Only a grand per ad, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
is that cool with
trade.
You? Okay, well, here's the question that this brings up as we're talking about the struggle that you've been going through. Why a glossy magazine about art in L.A.?
Why? Oh, well, I thought it was very necessary. I'm not sure that L.A. thinks it's necessary, but I felt like, I wanted it because I really got sick of Artform not writing about L.A. or art in America, and you'd comb through it, you'd look for the one review, and I just thought, this just really doesn't speak to me very much. And I didn't like the academic jargon. I mean, I just really can't read Artform. I can't. I still.
You're not
cannot.
Alone.
Okay.
So, but Deb, but before we continue, though,
okay.
Yeah.
I know that Deb has a stack of art forums here.
I saw those.
Why don't you take a position on this?
Take a position on art forum?
Yeah.
I studied semiotics in school, so I have a love for the academic language.
Okay.
I mean, I think part of that is me, to be totally honest, just fetishizing language in general. I mean, I really do enjoy that. I don't necessarily think that it in any way always adds meaning. I think that it can be a totally masturbatory game. But I also find it, I often find it enjoyable. But maybe I shouldn't say this, but I don't comb through and read every article in Artform by any means. And Knight sends us our copy of Artform in the mail with a, little signed note and a business card every month. So they come to us,
right,
and then we keep them and get to page through them and look at the fantastic pictures. And occasionally when I have a spare 20 minutes, I get to sit in the back and read something. But
So is this a long-term courtship that he's engaging in with you for you to advertise with him?
I think that, you know, they have the ability to send out free copies of magazines to commercial galleries. And so they look at, I don't know, you know, where they get their list, if they do it from art fairs, you know, or if they do it from, you know, specific districts or how they do it. But then, you know, we did not get a free copy of Art Forum until we moved to this location. They were not as interested in courting us when we were in our standalone location in Santa Monica, surrounded by car dealerships, I have to say. But it might be district, but it is fun to receive them. But I definitely think that it makes sense that you would want to fill that spot. And it's still true, even with all of the attention and excitement that's focused on Los Angeles, that, you know, LA exhibitions get considerably less press than most of the major publications. So
they do. You know, and I'm just really surprised an LA magazine hasn't really caught on more, or, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, because LA art, I mean, I really believe this is a quite, I mean, I don't know if it's the center, but it's definitely second city for sure. Or, you know, I mean, there's some really, I mean, people from New York are moving here. People are, you know.
Yeah.
So LA should have a magazine.
Yeah. What do you feel, or what is your sense of the magazine landscape? Because there have been and are a couple of others around, right? Do you feel like you're sort of, they're in your periphery, or you're not, you try to focus, tune them out?
I mean, I'm totally aware of a couple of magazines because there are competitors, you know, so I'm totally aware.
It's your job to be aware of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that we're still we're about the same. We, you know, every time I get my magazine, I'm sure they get artillery and they look at our ads. We look at their ads. We look at how many numbers, pages they have, how many, you know, that's just the business. And I guess there's room for two. I mean, I don't know. You know, we probably should combine efforts or something. I mean, I just don't, I mean, and that's been a, never mind. Let's.
You don't want to go there, it sounds like.
Yeah, I can't.
There's a story, but go ahead.
Oh, awkward silence.
You didn't let us have an awkward silence.
I don't know. I mean, okay, so what are there? There's Art Limited, there's Artillery, there's Art Scene, there's Art, it's not Art Issues. Extra.
Extra.
There used to be Art US, Art Issues. Art Issues, I think, everybody really liked that magazine, but they only lasted 10 years. It's just impossible, you know. And Art US, is it called? Or that's gone, I think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about,
that
one? I think it's gone. So I'm unaware if there's any more, but I think we're just talking about Artillery, Art Limited, and Art Scene, and Extra, aren't we?
And do you guys, now here's the question I ask. How did I put it with... who was the last person that I... Oh, maybe it was David Pagel, right? I said, so do you critics, like, go to this bar and all get together and hang out? So I'm going to ask you the same question. Yeah. Hell no, right?
Hell no.
Are they your enemies, your mortal enemies?
Well, I mean, we would see each other at art fairs, and everybody's civil. And, well, I'm not an enemy. It's kind of, you know, you kind of... I mean, it's sort of like, I don't know him well enough to hate him.
Right.
Isn't this the dynamic that, like... most artists have with just about every other artist in the same city that they're in, pretty much.
Right.
It's like, I mean, that sort of competitive kind of, like, don't even think about trying to fuck me over kind of dynamic.
And at the same time, there's that idealistic, you want there to be enough space for everybody to succeed and kind of for that success to propel additional momentum. But it's hard for that to always function in practice, I think.
Yeah, I
don't see any, no, we're not, I mean, Art Extra, it's kind of funny. When I started, I ran into Steven, and I'm forgetting his last name. I think he's the editor, and I forgot his name. Sorry. But anyway, he's like, hey,
we'll get our fact checker on that.
Congratulations or whatever. And so we decided to they send me their magazine, and I send them their
That's
magazine.
Nice.
So we've done that, you know, for – but I think everybody's competitive. I think all of the magazines are – you know, I think it's because everybody's really struggling, you know, so it's, I think, you know, it's like a dog eat world out there. And I think that's why it's hard to be like, if we were all real successful,
right,
maybe it'd be like, oh, come on over. And, you know, how'd you get that ad, you know, or whatever. But I think it's because everybody's kind of struggling a little bit. I don't know.
Have you sensed that there's been any improvement, though, with the sort of quote-unquote recovery, you know, over the years?
Oh, in...
Because, I mean, certainly
I
if you look...
not.
Well, certainly if you look at, just for the sake of argument or whatever, however you want to put it, the art fairs are booming.
Right.
You know, the high end is booming. Mm-hmm. But you're... But as a sort of... As a magazine other than Art Forum, you're kind of a working class machine, right?
Right. Yes.
Art fairs might be the only business model in the art world that I can think of that is a smart, strategic business model, in some ways.
Right.
You know.
But do you think, I mean, that's probably reflective of the, you know, the wealth in the art world or something. I mean, another barometer, in my opinion, is the galleries just keep opening.
They do.
I mean, that is always kind of amazing to me.
Is that then more opportunity for an advertiser for you?
Yeah, sure.
So are those numbers going up accordingly or not necessarily?
No. I need a publisher.
You do?
Yeah.
I need a publisher.
All right. We got another spot in for you.
Okay, another. I'm not supposed to. Oh, God. Was that me soliciting?
Oh, no. It's okay. It's okay.
No, it's hard to wear. Yeah. It's hard to wear too many hats.
Yeah.
You don't really stretch.
You probably know that, too, when you were probably running a gallery only by yourself and didn't have an assistant.
Yep.
It really you end up compromising a lot of quality and, you know. I mean, I could go and be, you know, having more editorial meetings, going and seeing more art, going to the fairs, going really, and I can't do that because I'm, you know, wearing then the publisher hat and I got to deal with the salespeople. I got to do this. I got to get, you know, so.
Now, as you're describing the administrative or editorial meetings, are you living in an actual office, this team, or is it?
No, everybody works
from home. Mm-hmm.
Right. And
the meetings
are
virtual or?
No. I mean, we've done a couple of, you know, conference calls, but usually I work as far as editorial. I work with my associate editor who used to be Carrie Patterson.
Yeah.
And it's now Christopher Michno. And we have, you know, we talk on the phone all the time. We talk about the run list. And then I try to have editorial meetings with... I will say my writers are so good. They're really loyal. They pitch great stories. Yeah. They're very loyal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. That
it
is really amazing.
It seems like you have a really great, supportive community of writers.
Yeah.
That's sort of the feeling that I've gotten from talking to people who write.
Right, and they come, and then we'll do editorial meetings at my house, and then, you know, break out some wine afterwards. Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Good community
cookies.
Feeling. So I guess my question would be, what do you feel still, after doing this for almost 10 years, is the specific thing that Artillery brings? And I don't just necessarily mean what you would say, you know, in an e-blast. But for you, for your kind of heart, what hooked you and made you want to do it originally? What is it that you think Artillery has specifically?
I like to think that we're kind of have an honest approach to art, and we want to demystify it instead of. And I know that the academic thing is, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Let's have it. But there's room for a different kind of magazine, too. And I really, that's what I want for Artillery to have, that niche, is for, it to be a magazine that really has an honest approach to art, has more of an egalitarian right. part to art, you know? I mean, there's just a lot of odious aspects to the art world, and I am very turned off by right. a lot of aspects of the art world. And I really want Artillery to kind of look at the good parts of the, right. you know, I mean, you know, because I mean, the extreme, you know, wealth and all that is like a real turn off to me, because I'm kind of a, you know, liberal socialist kind of person. And so that's a real turn off to me. But also, that's how everybody makes money. So it's right. kind of a conflict. But I think, and we can talk about that conflict, but what I really want Artillery to be is something that really kind of reveals the art world in a very honest approach, and also talks about, you know, what from the artist's point of view. You know, I really think that our writers really get behind what, you know, artists are really, you know, interested in. And also, I want it to be representative of L.A., too.
Right.
L.A. is really important, I think.
So it sounds like, from what you were saying, that you haven't covered these odious areas of the art world. You stay away
well,
from them?
We have a little bit, and then we get in trouble.
Okay, give us an example.
Well, we did a, you know, I think I have some enemies right now. We did a piece on the nonprofits, and, you know, a lot of people didn't like that, you know, because we exposed some of the, you know, some of the things about nonprofits are, one thing is, you know, a lot of people come off when they have a nonprofit, you know, saying, oh, can you give me a nonprofit price? Oh, we don't have a budget. Turns out they're making millions of dollars. And, you know, so, and that's great. Good for them.
Right.
But, you know, don't hide behind, I mean, be a little more honest about it. So we did kind of an exposure. It wasn't supposed to be like a horrible thing. We were just kind of demystifying,
right.
mainly because I was kind of like, what is going on with these nonprofits? They are like hugely, they have all this money, they have these lavish parties, they have these, I'm like, what's going on? And I really wanted to know, how does that happen? And I had Charles Rapley, my husband / writer, you know, and he's an investigative reporter. He was that before author.
Right.
So, you know, he knows how to, you know, get on the phone.
So what did, since this piece has already come out, right? So what,
right.
whom did he write about?
He wrote about lax art.
Surprise.
Land. Mistake Room.
It's Mistake Room? I didn't know Mistake Room was a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, those are kind of the three. So he mainly wrote about independent. See, these we realized also, I thought it was quite informative, but I just wanted to, I just said, we got some enemies from it. And
yeah.
I don't know, I would love your opinion if you read it, maybe you didn't, but I didn't think it was scathing.
Well, to what extent, when you say enemies, what, how does that play
well,
out?
The people, you know, aired that they were very upset with the article.
They called or?
Emailed me, but maybe I shouldn't mention names, but they were not happy.
Were there threats involved?
No, not
okay.
threats.
Okay, well, that's good.
Well, I think that nonprofits,
well, because,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead. No.
No,
I was going to say there couldn't really be threats because everything was, we didn't do any libel.
Right.
Right, right, right.
Go ahead.
I think nonprofits are often accustomed to a certain status in which they are not scrutinized in the same way in the art world.
Right.
So.
And I was really curious because,
yeah.
and they always seem to be kind of a certain ilk, you know, and I don't know.
So oh, yeah. I mean, I think you're talking about a big portion of the art world in a nutshell right there,
right.
aren't you?
So I really wanted to, well, yeah. So I really wanted to kind of unearth that, and nobody liked that, you know.
Well, God bless you for doing so.
Well,
jeez, I'm sorry it didn't.
Yeah. Well, they never advertised.
I'm sure. Sorry
I
you didn't get.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say, I'm sorry they didn't shower you with praise for having dug up all
but
this
I
dirt.
Didn't think, I still didn't think it was bad. In my opinion, you know, like for instance, lax art. I'm still not sure what was kind of the bad things we said. You know, but. You know, in my opinion, Lori Furstenberg is enormously successful. She knows how to, you know, she knows how to run a business. She knows how to raise money, and she knows how to have a successful institution. I mean, it's wildly successful. But I wanted to know how and why, you know, and why is it called a nonprofit?
Right.
It's a good question. It's a fair question. What other similar pieces, if any, come to mind?
That we got in trouble?
Well, no, I was just, you know, like you, I asked you earlier, I asked you earlier what odious aspects of the art world.
Oh, well, the main thing I have a problem with the art world is this real division of very wealthy, untouchables, like the Gagosian, the untouchables. And there's that, then you have the medium, then maybe the real struggling. Mm-hmm. And I guess just this disparity and the... It's so antithetical. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Indeed.
Miss Semiotics over there.
I think I want that reputation.
I just, I don't know. I have a problem with a piece of work being $1 million, to tell you the truth. But I realize, you know, like I had this conversation with, you know, Mike Kelly, and, you know, he probably has... He's a very liberal-minded person, too. And I think, you know, a lot of his problem was he had a problem with the art world the way it is or had evolved. And but he didn't mind getting $1 million for a piece either. So,
you spoke to him, he had already reached that.
He was right before.
Tulsa had
You had the last interview.
Yeah. He died, yeah.
Yeah, it was awful. He was very depressed. Very depressed. You could tell. I mean, I wasn't a really great friend of Mike Kelly's either, but you could just tell. Yeah. You know?
So you didn't talk about why he was depressed, I take it.
No, because I didn't feel like, you know, a friend that was, would be like that. Yeah, Mike sure. down in the dumps, right. You know. But he was, yeah. Sad.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing to deal with, sort of what is the goal of being in the art world as an artist and any of the roles that we have, right? Is that we all want to survive and thrive. And then you hit that point where it suddenly starts to seem a little bit obscene. Mm-hmm. So how do you get to the point where you are surviving and thriving without entering the territory of the obscene and onerous? I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So what would be your ideal kind of way of being a magazine in that world? Do you know what I mean? Would it be
right, because if you're wildly successful, then I'm the people I'm criticizing, right?
Right. So I mean, I understand that it's hard to do that in publishing to a certain extent. Well, and the same for me or Michael. If any of us gets wildly successful, we get to a point where we have to think, okay, do I follow this path to its conclusion where I potentially become one of the assholes that I don't want to be, or, you know, do I find some sort of alternate route?
Well, I mean, this question has been posed a lot, and, you know, my answer is like, I don't know, let me try, you know, I'll let you know, I'd like to try.
When I get
there. I'm not someone that needs, you know, loads of money or anything. Do I want more? Sure. Do I want my magazine to be more successful? Yes. I mean, I want mainly because I would like to pay writers more. Right. I would like my magazine to be successful mainly so I could pay the writers what they're worth and, you know, everybody that works for me and also pay myself. But, you know, everyone deserves to pay, you know, get, you know, what they're worth. So I would be very happy about that, you know.
Can a magazine that's struggling get grants? Is there a precedent for that?
No, because I have to be nonprofit.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah. Yep. You should have seen her expression.
You know, we're going to have to take some pictures of Tulsa making expressions, I think, to go with the podcast.
My husband suggested, Carrie used to always say, Tulsa, why don't you try to do nonprofit? And I don't know. I'm too far into it now. I'm not going to do that now.
There's no guarantee.
It would be a different magazine if I were doing that.
Yeah. Well, and also there's no, once you, you know, if you in theory were to become that nonprofit, it's not like the grants are going to be rolling in automatically.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It's not. I think publishing is a difficult, the publication that I ran through it was a nonprofit or it was under the umbrella of another publishing nonprofit. And yes, it's definitely not necessarily an easier way to go.
Right.
And particularly because I think we did a lot of poetry, and there are a certain number of grants, mm-hmm. you know, particularly in New York, that focus on poetry. But from what I've heard, there aren't as many necessarily for arts writing, uh-huh. sort of designated. So, yeah, it would not necessarily be an easier path.
Right. And I know that Extra is an art, you know,
right.
nonprofit. And they routinely get that Andy Warhol grant, I think.
Which is a great yeah. one. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, they're like, woohoo, we got $100,000. Well, that sounds great. But, I mean, I'm telling you, if I got $100,000, I could spend that immediately and still yeah. not, like, see any vast improvement, you know.
Right.
That's not that much. To print a magazine and stuff, yeah. That's really yeah. not. That would... So, you know, and that's like a great deal that they got, you know, that
right.
much.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So how do you? Yeah, that was definitely the thing that I came to in terms of, in part, deciding to make having a gallery a for-profit model was the feeling that regardless of which side you sit on, you end up spending a large portion of your time raising money.
Right.
So, and for me, part of the difficulty with a nonprofit was the feeling that you were supposed to present as if you weren't raising money in a certain way, or the commercial aspects of it were mm-hmm. Less transparent, I think, than yeah. they mm-hmm. are right. in a for-profit model. Not to say that I don't love nonprofits as well, but just right. their pros and cons. Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, they're really springing up, too.
Nonprofits?
Yeah.
Are there any, shortcuts is somehow, for some reason, the word that comes to mind, raising money for the magazine? For example, this is totally absurd, but would you ever solicit funds from people that you feature in your two-page, you know, on the town spread?
No, you can't do that. Like, how would I do that? I mean, hey, let's explore this. I mean, you mean like if I was writing, like, hey, I will write about you guys, you know, if for
payola. You're talking about payola.
Yeah,
I don't know. I wasn't necessarily thinking of payola. I was just wondering if there are any sort of creative fundraising techniques.
I think that you try to be creative in how you're going to get advertisers or something like that, you know. Like, you know, I just had a talk with a gallery person, you know, that said, oh, we wouldn't mind, you know, if you featured the neighborhood or little, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's totally doable, yeah. you know, and I'm, you know, so there's things like that. And I do actually want to be, you know, kind of serve the community, you know.
Right.
But, you know, L.A. is an interesting place. I mean, I don't know that they like to consider themselves as a community. I don't know right. if you would have something to say that about you being a gallerist, you know. I mean, you guys don't all go out for a beer, do you?
We
after?
Don't, except at art fairs. I have to say that one of my art fairs, being the beast that they are, one of my favorite things has been that most of my close relationships with other gallerists have come from that time uh-huh. where we all have sort of the great equalizer of maybe you have a slightly bigger booth than I do, but you're still in a booth. Even right. Gagosian is in a booth mm-hmm. on concrete. He might not have to be there as many hours or do right. installation or takedown, but you know, everybody has that in common, and there's a lot of time, but mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, it's true. We do get isolated in our boxes and see way too many things, way too many shows mm. online, even of good friends, spaces. So yeah, but I mean, community, I feel like LA is a community that loves to hate itself and always has.
Yeah, there's something about that.
Growing up here, I remember constantly feeling like I was being rebellious by saying that I loved Los Angeles because, you know, people could drive from the mountains to the beach and then go to a house party as teenagers and still be grumbling about how much they hated the city. It's sort of, mm-hmm. it's part of our identity, right? It's not the same as you go to New York, and New Yorkers talk about how hard it is to live in New York, but there is much more of a, we love it here. And I think right. that the appeal for a lot of people in major cities of going someplace like, you know, Portland, which, you know, people like to talk about a lot, or other mm-hmm. sort of smaller cities that seem like they have artistic identities that are budding. I think part of the appeal of those places is that people there are often unapologetically in love with where they live and vocal about it. And, you know, LA is this great postmodern, decentralized, confused city. Mm-hmm. And part of what we love about it is that it has so much space to define yourself. But that space is somehow, by its very nature, not necessarily supported. Mm-hmm. If that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and it makes sense. But it sounds more like the LA self-hating of the city. Is that right? But the art world, LA art world, I should say, is pretty hot on itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's into itself in a certain way, but I think that in a lot of ways it's more external validation. I mean, it's going to New York and having all of the artists that I meet in New York tell me that they're moving to LA next week, and so many of the artists who are here, I think, do love it, and but mm-hmm. also already have that love-hate relationship with it. Yeah.
That's a little scary when you when you say
that. Well, but that's the thing. I had somebody come by, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago and say to me, there are so many new galleries opening up and so many people from New York who are opening up spaces here. Are you scared? And I was kind of like, now I am. Like when you say it, like it's a whole bunch of zombies coming to eat my head. Yes, I'm scared. I mean, and again, it's that thing where ideally we want the added influx of energy to also be added influx of economy and support and all of these mm-hmm. things. And then on the other side of that, there's the fear that there isn't enough support or resources to actually hold mm-hmm. all of the new, you know, all of the new spaces, all of the new artists, all of the new. So it's,
I mean, people talk about it a lot. I mean, I think it's, I mean, we are known as, you know, L.A. hates itself. I mean, we don't have bags that have I heart L.A. on them like New York. I mean, it is kind of weird. I don't get it.
Well, you know, with her talking about all the new galleries moving in, is that exciting for you? Because does that represent more opportunity for ads?
Well, yeah, always. You know, you're like, so have you been? Maybe they haven't formed a prejudicism yet. And let's get them quick before they read about artillery.
Have you had any conversations with any of the like new downtown galleries or anything like that?
Not the new because I can't go out, but I need to. I mean, I'm aware of, like, you know, Rosamund Felsen move and all that. I know Wilding Cran is a new one, and he's a pretty cool guy. He moved from, I think, Canada or Toronto. I can't remember. But anyway, no, not necessarily. I guess there's MoMA. What's some other new ones? Oh, of course, Night Gallery and all those, but those were
No. I'm talking about new ones, like,
well,
that I can't even think
they?
Of the names of.
Tell me.
Well, you got to do your homework.
I know.
I'm not getting paid to go to discover those places.
Now, are you telling me they are the ones, when we say downtown, now there is a huge, you know, downtown is big. There's that Santa Fe.
Corridor. They're probably in the crappy parts of downtown. Yeah, sure.
But is there, I mean, there are little sections now, like that Santa Fe corridor where CB1 and Rosamund is. Where else is downtown are they doing? They have the Box.
Let us know when you find out.
I will. Yeah, I got to do some homework. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay.
Another
piece
add.
Of free advice.
Oh my gosh.
It's as an artist, it's a little, and just, you know, as people's trying to survive in a city that's getting more expensive every mm-hmm. day, mm-hmm. that sentiment, you know, here's another wave of artists coming from New York is a little scary.
Right.
But I was just trying to flip that in your advantage, basically. But, you know, you're so overwhelmed that you haven't really had the chance to kind of like go see all these galleries.
Right. I mean, and there's so many. And then also the neighborhoods are interesting to me now. I mean, it's kind of like, oh, is Culver City the hot spot now? Oh, is downtown now? Right. Oh, is Highland? It does this shifting, and you know, it's kind of like the ringleaders, or is it, you know, Highland Park now because Regan Projects went there, you know, or is Culver City still because Blum and Poe is here? Right. You know, I mean, there's this all this kind of stigma and status attached to the new location. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of that's another thing about the art world that just kind of like
5 minute attention span.
Yeah.
For
right.
And the
right.
need to chase the next.
Yeah.
Hot right. spot.
But that you're is. But you're going out to openings and
I
whatnot
do.
A lot,
I
right?
Do,
right.
But you
so
can't.
You're amidst that culture, yeah. aren't you?
Well, I am, but I mean, it is hard. I mean, everyone complains about going to openings, and it is hard to try to. I did, I think, three areas last Saturday or something: Chinatown, Highland, and Wilshire, or something. I did
right,
and that is. I mean, I left at 5 o'clock and got home at 10.
Yeah,
I mean that's ridiculous.
It is a little absurd.
It is.
But if you are, but if you're going to openings and you know and doing, the social thing,
had fun. Yeah.
But you have fun, so that's not absurd then.
I know, but
Deb, jump in anytime.
I would prefer not to have to drive either. Then I couldn't drink, but that's probably a blessing. I always say to myself, like
right.
that's probably really good. You know.
I don't go to openings as much as I should,
right.
I have to say. I get...
You got to reserve your energies.
I got to reserve my energies.
Right.
Yeah. I got to be able to bring it at my own
yeah.
openings.
So. Yeah, that's right. Bring it
too
at your own openings
social.
And then bring it during the day at work, right?
It was really nice, actually, which isn't to say that when I go to openings, lots of people necessarily know me, but there are many more people mm-hmm. who I will recognize and get pulled in conversations with now than when I first started. When I first started the gallery, it was great because... Almost nobody knew me. I had not been involved in the LA art world. I'd been in New York, and I just got to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to all the openings I wanted and mm-hmm. not have conversations. It's not that I don't love talking to people, but, you know, I also like
I know.
Going. This is the thing that everybody says, but it is really nice to go when it's quiet and you can actually see the art.
Right.
Because if I go to the opening, I always feel like I have to go back again.
That's right.
It's just...
That's true.
It's too much, man.
It
much.
Really has to be some... I mean, as I think the artists have two strategies. One is that, well, there are three strategies. One is that they go to all the openings, no matter what.
Right.
Because they're going to know people or they're going to meet people.
Right.
Another is that they, closer to me, they go to openings of people that they know are in the show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And three is they don't ever fucking go to openings.
They what?
Right? They don't ever go to openings.
Oh, right.
It's just like, I don't go to
openings. You're saying that say that? Or
I'm just assuming that yeah. there is that cohort of artists
right.
that just don't go to openings. You probably know one.
Yes.
Okay.
I know a couple.
Thank you for validating. Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. So.
Does that mean they say, I don't go to openings, but they'll go out and see art?
Yes.
Okay.
They just don't right. want
well,
to do
it's a zoo.
The, yeah, they don't want to do the social
and the parking and the bullshit.
The feeling yeah. that you're sort of there to be seen rather than there to engage in a meaningful
right.
way. Although it is, of course, absolutely meaningful to go out and support
right,
your
supportive.
Friends and support
yeah.
the gallery and all of those things. But, you know, when anything is taken to its extreme, I think people get a little burnt out and then they make it a policy.
Well, then the other thing is just for devil's advocate is... Certainly, and I imagine you're going to relate to this, is if you're part of the artist group that is a little more isolated,
right.
those openings are going to be a fairly substantial social interaction for you.
True.
So there's actually, you may have superficial conversation. You may be supporting your friend or friends. You may be having very superficial conversations or short conversations or whatever.
Right.
But that's it.
Right.
Right.
Otherwise, you're on your own a lot of the time
yeah.
working.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Definitely true.
Yeah.
Do mm-hmm. you find that because you don't do reviews yourself, that mm-hmm. you are perhaps more immune to negative reactions from somebody who may not have received quite as favorable review or hasn't? Do you have to deal with that dynamic?
I don't
at
think
all?
There's enough.
Yeah.
Critical reviews.
Yeah.
I mean, so. I hardly see it. I mean,
right.
and this is so common. A reviewer will say, I'll say, why didn't you go and review that one show? I really liked that. And I go, you know, I just really didn't like that. And I said, well, then review it and tell us why you didn't like
right.
it. But they
so,
will not.
So it sounds like you've had, over the course of the publishing, a hard time getting your writers to criticize shows.
Yeah, they don't want to write about shows that... And I understand.
How many of your writers are artists?
I was going to say.
Oh, I don't know if I ever answered your question. But, I would say half. And okay. I prefer, like, the reviewers. I mean, and I've been talking to Christopher about this. I'm like, you know, I kind of want our reviewers not to be artists. Yeah.
I think you'll get more willingness, at least, to write a negative review. It's very difficult for an artist.
That's
to
probably
write a negative
I didn't
review
think of it
about
that
another
way.
Artist without feeling like they're
right.
You know, just
that,
it's yeah.
Duh, I didn't think of that.
And why, meanwhile, are your non-artist writers or critics, if whatever label
I
they
think,
go by,
I,
are they? What are they afraid of?
Well, they just say they don't. Okay, most of them say, well, I really like the opportunity to write about something I like. I mean, and that's what they get out of doing a review right. is, you know, writing about, they have more passion about it. And I understand that. If I write about an artist right. or review someone that I really like, you know, you have more passion about it and you'll probably do better writing. But I did write a few reviews for a little magazine or something, and I did like doing bad reviews.
Yeah,
I did.
For you.
I mean, because I kind of like, hey, you know, not all this art is good out here, but you have to be constructive. I really,
right.
I'm not doing it just to rag on someone,
right? Just to bring somebody
just,
down,
or but... at least say, you know, this stuff worked in this, but actually, these were probably the weakest link in the. Come on.
You need to here. I have an idea that as you're saying this, you okay. need to assign all of your writers to listen to. The David Pagel episode of this podcast.
I want to listen to it too.
Yeah,
because
he's all about that.
He will do
yeah.
Bad reviews,
he's,
and I'm
you
got to
give
like,
him credit
right
for that.
On.
Definitely, but I can. I mean, I definitely understand how people, if they're having the opportunity to write a review, want to also bring attention to something that they think is worthy of attention, because it does have, you know, it does have an impact on the person later.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes it's. It's good to have a mix in there. It definitely makes the positive reviews carry more weight.
Exactly. Yeah.
I personally think, I mean, I've said this before, I personally think that it makes positive reviews carry more weight when there are moments of criticism as well,
yeah.
because it feels so fully considered.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be hard.
Isn't there, I mean, since we're talking about reviews, yeah. and I hopefully this will link back to your magazine somehow, but I'm kind of getting the image of, you know, there are multiple, obviously, sort of types of reviews, but let's just call it two for now. There's the kind where you have a really engaged writer, you know, writing a really engaged review, and that sort of creates this dialogue with
right.
you and the artist and, you know, maybe the gallery and whoever else. Because I didn't read the article, but I saw an example of that posted recently. And then you just have the sort of generic kind that we are all well too familiar with, where it's like, oh, yeah, did you see this review? You know, what did they think of it? And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I kind of agree with that. You know, it's just kind of this mansy-pansy kind of, this is. And then there's the thing here. Okay, here, now we're finally getting somewhere. So this is what we started talking about with David, and now David Pagel, and now we can talk about with you. In the 11th hour, and that is, to what extent, maybe this doesn't apply to artillery at all, but to what extent are the galleries taking your good reviews and like putting them into their press clippings, you know?
I see that almost everyone does it.
Yeah.
And we'll go to people in New York will say, oh, I saw the artillery. I think everybody likes press, you know?
Yep.
Regardless of, and I mean, I think we're reputable enough just for the mere fact that, you know, we've been around now for 10 years. Whether you like us or not, we're here. And so I do think, you know, that I think they're appreciative and they definitely put it in their press
yeah.
clips or whatever.
And does it make you proud or how do you
yeah,
feel?
I
yeah,
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I like that, especially when the gallery, if we review them, they send it around. But, you know, they do that with the LA Times, and I understand that. But I'm always like, hey, we did a review too. Why didn't you send it?
Well, that's
it?
What we talked about with David, you know, that the LA Times was the stamp of approval.
Right.
You know, so with artillery, is it maybe more like, you know, here's another review of the show kind of
I
thing?
I think so.
Will they put one in if it's a bad review? Or are there so few of those that you maybe...
Oh, that I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't...
Okay.
Yeah, I think probably people still would, but... yeah, I mean, and then, yeah, they're going to... But artillery hasn't achieved that, you know, that status yet. But that's all right. The LA Times has been around a couple of centuries, so...
Yeah, it's
all right.
True.
And also, from a purely practical perspective... if you're talking about people sending out specific mailings about an mm-hmm. article, not just mm-hmm. sharing it on social media mm-hmm. or whatever, there are kind of, in some ways, unspoken rules about your subscription-based being annoyed when you send out additional emails.
Okay.
And if it says, and this is the, you know, this is the thing about them being around mm-hmm. for a couple centuries, if it says the LA Times or the New York Times, then people are considerably less sort of likely to think that you're sending them too many emails. But if it's any other publication, then they kind of can get cranky, which
right,
is a little ridiculous, but it's true.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
Because I do kind of like take it personal.
Yeah,
sometimes.
But I think it is. It's kind of, I definitely have had those moments where I'm kind of like, ooh, I really want to send this out.
Right.
How many people are going to get irritated with me for the extra email? I think when you get to a certain point, that is no mm-hmm. longer, you know, considerably significant. But
so to review.
To review.
Deb has helped you shift your perspective on promotion.
Yes, totally.
I have helped you advertise for a new publisher.
Yes.
Is there anything else we could help you with?
No, I appreciate you actually telling me that because I have. And then, yeah, you're right. And also probably people are like annoyed, you know, with it's like sending
more,
you know,
e-blasts. Yeah, people are very sensitive about their emails. I had one, and when we had a show last summer that had a number of different events attached to it that required e-blasts, mm-hmm. and I had somebody reply. Somebody who was a relatively well-known art consultant, wrote back with just really ? Another one. Oh gosh, and it was actually one of my favorite things ever to receive that because you know it's nice when people are just. Right up there with right. how they feel about it.
I thought you were going to say one of my favorite art consults. No, not anymore.
I'll have to say that I did write back a rather quippy response.
Oh, good for you.
I couldn't help myself. Uh-huh, uh-huh. My manners left me for a moment. It's good. It's good for that to happen from time to time.
I don't have a problem with just hitting delete.
Yeah.
I don't really have, you know, I'm used to like... thousands of emails, yeah. Hundreds would be more accurate,
right.
actually.
Right.
But you just delete, delete, delete. I don't care. I've never even bothered to go on and unsubscribe.
Yeah.
I have never. A few I'll just mark as junk.
Be nice if it were as easy to delete things in the real world as it is digitally. Yay for digital. thank you for the lovely conversation. Just going to say.
Oh, yes. You mean it's over?
Not necessarily. But
No. Deb, you're right on it. She's right on it.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Thank you, Tulsa. Same,
yeah.
So,
let's go
so
and have
great.
A drink sometime.
I know, right? So great talking with you. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yay.
And?
We're out.
Well done. Well, that has to be the most awesome ending ever, wouldn't you say, to a conversation amongst the three of us? Thank you very much again to Tulsa. Had a lot of fun talking with her, and thanks, of course, to Deb as well for joining us. And I wanted to let you know before we go a couple of things. One is been having a couple of people help me out with the podcast of late, and that is exciting and encouraging. It's going to help us get more people so we can hopefully put out more episodes. But meanwhile, I am still in the look for an intern, so... We are coming up on the fall semester, so if you are in school and are interested in interning for the podcast, I will be happy to talk to you about it, give you more details, get you credit, and so on. So do get in touch if that's something you're interested in or if you know someone who would be a good candidate. And secondly, I want to say to all of you out there who have migrated from New York City, preferably, you know, first choice would be, I suppose, L.A. If you are in Los Angeles and you left New York, I would love to hear your story. So get in touch. On the other hand, if you have left New York and landed anywhere else permanently, I want to hear your story, too. So exodus from New York is basically the theme here. And we will maybe put together an episode of people's stories who have left New York. So get in touch if that's you. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you very much again for being here. I appreciate you listening. Of course, you can support the show in a few different ways. You can donate to the show. Donations were very light for July, and I don't I think I've gotten one for August. So if you could add to that list, that would be fantastic. Even a small amount is appreciated. And you can also, of course, follow the show on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all linked through the website, theconversationpod.com. Of course, you can also leave a kind review and give us a good rating on iTunes, which helps other people find the show. Thank you so much again for being here. I will talk to you soon.